You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
As if they don't have too much on their plates, the Kings of Combat Sports podcast, John and Wade. They talk about the things they did that day. The land of the work of Triple H.
We want to smack down.
Hello, everybody. This is Wei Ting here. I'm joined by Neil Flanagan. The Jays are up 3-2. Against the LA Dodgers. All right.
4-2 according to my live activities widget on my iPhone screen. But
let's just jump to the finish, okay? By the time all of you guys are listening to this, the Jays have won game one. They have decimated the Dodgers. I'm predicting right now 7-2. Okay. That's the final score. You heard it here first.
Wei is the only Canadian, and certainly the only Torontonian. Not watching this game live.
I'm the only person dedicated enough to SmackDown to reviewing and talking about Jimmy Uso's plight against Drew McIntyre that I'm willing to sacrifice the SmackDown or the Jays game. No, John is of course doing best man duties for a wedding that's coming up, but he is live tweeting the game as well. So
yes,
so you can follow his catch up. Maybe we'll update people when the game actually ends. Here. But Neil, thank you for joining me as always.
It's always a pleasure, Wei.
This was to be a Neil Flanagan week with three Neil Flanagan appearances, but of course you're coming off of illness, so we missed you on the wellness policy. But we did catch you on book club this week, didn't we?
That's right. Yeah, I got to record book club just yesterday when I was feeling better. Unfortunately, just something I ate on Monday affected me on Monday evening and through Tuesday, and without getting into any of the gory details, it's what my granny used to call digestive distress. So you can sort of take from that what you will, but I couldn't risk joining Jordan and Wei in case something happened live mm-hmm. on the stream. But a tremendous episode of the wellness policy is those two talked about music, and I trolled them with a pop with a cheesy pop song from 2001 from the chat. So highly recommend that. But yes, I was back fighting fit by yesterday. It was a short-lived illness. I got it out of my system. I managed to join John for double-double and espresso patrons to do a very enjoyable chat. I hope that came through for people. I know that John and I both had a great time chatting both politics and Gorilla Monsoon on Book Club.
You talked about two books on this particular episode, 107 Days by Kamala Harris and also Irresistible Force, The Life and Times of Gorilla Monsoon by Brian R. Solomon. I hope you spent some time talking about what these two books have in common, because I think that would be wonderful analysis. But that is an exclusive for our Double Double and Espresso patrons. For all of you guys who are listening to us in the Post Wrestling Cafe regular tier, well, tomorrow you have an edition of Collision Course with Nate Milton returning to join Kate from Montreal from what looked like a really stellar edition of Collision when they announced the lineups there. And also on Sunday, we have Jack Wannan coming back for a solo edition of our UFC 321 review. On the free feed, we've got our friends at NXT, Braden and Davey, talking about Halloween Havoc. That review will be out on Sunday. So look for that at youtube.com/postwrestling. Neil, are you ready to talk about some SmackDown?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So SmackDown tonight comes to us from Tempe, Arizona here. Tempe, Arizona. Russell Tix had this at about 5,000 tickets out. So a bit of a smaller arena. You know, this is pretty much like sold to capacity here. Backstage, we start things off with Cody Rhodes. He's with Jimmy Uso, who has come back to SmackDown, I guess. Has he been officially traded?
There was a bit of banter from Cody about what are you doing here? And Jimmy was sort of talking about he needed to speak to Nick Aldis for some reason.
Who's really keeping track? He's just backstage with Cody Rhodes, and Jimmy, who's here to talk to Nick Aldis, says, thanks, Cody, for what you did for Jacob Fatu last week. And Cody says it was his pleasure. And he asks Jimmy if everything is okay with Jay. Cody says he's got a brother in the game, so he gets it, but he's got to do what's right for him, and you got to do what's right for you. So that leads us into a show-long story involving, I would say, Jimmy Uso, you know, back being one of the principal players on SmackDown this week. We have Michael Cole and Corey Graves back on commentary together, and we start with Cody Rhodes actually in the ring. Cody Rhodes addresses the crowd. What do you guys want to talk about? Well, last week, he did something very uncharacteristic, I'll say. Mm-hmm. He smacked Drew in the head with the championship to cause a DQ for a match that he challenged Drew McIntyre to. So he's left wondering if he should apologize. But he's interrupted by Drew, who comes through the crowd. Drew says he doesn't want an apology. Doesn't even want an explanation for why Babyface would suddenly do that to end the match. Drew says the audiences are cheering for Cody and they're brainwashed by his corporate propaganda into cheering for him no matter what he does. For instance, at WrestlePalooza, he screwed him with the referees and last week, bashing him in the head with the title. Drew has been screwed so often, he says, that this is now about Drew McIntyre finishing his story and he's going to finish it next week at Saturday night's main event. So he reiterates that he did not attack Jacob Fatu, even though he hates the family, but maybe it was Jimmy who did it. In fact, maybe Jimmy was taking a page out of his wife's playbook, attacking somebody mysteriously. Cody at this point has heard enough and he challenges Drew to a fight right here again. And this is when Jimmy Uso comes out. He attacks Drew with certainly a fire that suggests that he thinks Drew McIntyre was the one who attacked Jacob. And also, of course, talking about his wife probably didn't do him any favors either. So what did you think about this follow-up to Drew versus Cody after the announcement of their match at Saturday night's main event?
I thought it was okay. It wasn't stellar, but I think Drew did a good job in riling up the crowd who seemed at the beginning, you know, they were always happy to see Cody come out, and that's cool. But they weren't super amped until I think Drew got them riled a little bit, you know, calling them complicit in Cody's crimes and kind of, you know, giving them a bit of heel stuff to bite onto. So by the time, you know, Cody was challenging him to a fight and taking off his jacket, I think they were amped up. And this is good. And, you know, when we jump to the end of the episode as well, I think it's a decent enough build for a Saturday night's main event. Am I right in thinking that it's exclusive to Peacock already, this Saturday night's main event? It won't be on NBC. I knew that was happening. Yeah. I didn't know it was already the case.
Yeah, did they drive that hard very much to you?
They didn't mention Peacock to my knowledge. I didn't really hear them mention Peacock at all. But
I wasn't really listening for it.
I wasn't either. And they must have, because they were promoting SNME pretty heavily.
Chad, let us know because I think is a pretty, you know, important fact to let people know that, hey, this one's not actually going to be on NBC. It's going to be on Peacock. So make sure you're subscribed to it and that you haven't canceled, because our other PLEs aren't actually on Peacock. So let us know. I'm being completely swarmed via text messages about the Jays just hitting a fucking grand slam. So they have blown past my very inflated expectations. The score is now 9-2. Okay. Yeah. So, don't worry. SmackDown still takes precedent. Okay.
John is on cloud nine. I'm quite sure.
Brian, who's usually very on top of these things, says no mention of NBC. So that's kind of interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll see you next week if that's also the case. So, yeah, I thought the follow-up, I wish, made more of an explanation for why Cody did what he did. I thought that was such a glaring, like, weird characterization of a babyface to do that finish. But they at least hinted towards it being uncharacteristic, which Cody mentioned himself. And I think to use it to add to like the further grudges against Drew McIntyre, whose gimmick is that he, you know, all this shit just happens to him, yet like he speaks about it and he's not necessarily lying. We just don't really like him for it. I mean, I love that. You know, it's what makes Drew McIntyre work as a character, and it almost makes me justify it. So he had a great line about Naomi as well, which I really enjoyed.
I like that too, especially, you know, he got cut off more or less, you know, as he was saying it, but, you know, he got it in there. And I agree, the Drew character is at his best when there's actually some logic to his heel arguments. And he's got a point here.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. He certainly has a point, though. Like, it's never gotten to the point where like the audience wants to cheer him over like some of the baby faces that he's faced. And that includes CM Punk primarily. So backstage, we got Drew McIntyre telling all this that, hey, I'm innocent. You wouldn't have put me into a match last week if you didn't think so. So he tells him to do something about Jimmy. But Jimmy just storms in, attacks him again before security can pull him off. Then we get the MFTs, Tama Tonga and JC Mateo, Jeff Cobb, I believe, teaming together for the first time. They're all in their Guerrillas of Destiny war paint. And they're taking on the team, also teaming for the first time, of Rey Fénix and Shinsuke Nakamura, who are now a team because they were both attacked by the MFT. So, hey, we have something in common. Want to team up together? Rey Fénix says, I haven't teamed with you yet. I'm on track to teaming with everybody on the show except my brother. So, yes, why don't we team up together? So we get this team. Tama, would you say... he looks bigger to me than he
looks beefy.
Before.
Yeah, he made his return. I think it was the Perth show, and that's John and I did kind of a mini review because it was SmackDown was on at 8 a.m. that morning. I think that was the show where he came back, and I really notable. I think he definitely looks a bit beefier. The other thing I noted, but probably didn't mention on that show, was that Shinsuke's got his old theme back. It's pretty much his original theme at this point too.
Yeah, yeah.
The Street Profits had, by the way, who weren't on tonight, but they had their, you know, we got the swag song as well on that episode of SmackDown. So an upgrade from that terrible, whatever crap they had recently.
It must be something involving CFOs and whatever rights, you know, might be attached to all that. The fact that, I mean, it doesn't have to be exclusively about something like that, but I wonder if something changed. I guess we will be able to tell when Johnny Gargano turns back into a babyface and whether or not he gets that theme back too. So certainly adds to the, you know, perception of him being a babyface. You can't really do Shinsuke Nakamura without that song at this point. Yeah. So the finish comes here as Fénix delivers a corkscrew dive. Solo distracts the ref as Tama Tonga delivers a choke slam to Fénix on the apron. Tama Tonga then debuts his new finisher, which is a running back elbow that he calls the cutthroat for the win. Essentially, this was like a hidden blade, but to a facing opponent. So your thoughts on this match, Neil?
I quite enjoyed it. It was a very WWE match. It was kind of... quite patterned in the way that these are, sometimes are. I quite liked that sort of hidden blade variation, sort of down low. Tama Tonga is for all the joking we do about Tangaloa, I think his brother is a very solid worker, and so these are four good guys in the ring. So I expected a decent match, and that's what I got. And I think it helps build the MFTs because they were, like, just a few weeks ago, looking pretty pathetic whenever there was like maybe two or three of them. And then, you know, now we've got this sort of much more imposing group.
Yeah, I certainly like the face paint. I mean, it makes them feel a bit more special and a little more intimidating. But I have to say, in watching a match like this, I feel like all these guys are somewhat hampered by having to work this like WWE TV style, which for whatever reason just like takes all of their wrestling down a big notch. You know, like we've seen far better matches from all four of them elsewhere, and I don't know, maybe just in seeing them, I kind of had higher expectations for this. And like you said, Neil, it just felt like a pretty generic tag match to me. They're continuing to try to build the MFTs as this sort of threat on SmackDown. And other than frequent appearances and these sort of like backs, like what after post-match attacks, I'm still not really feeling it, you know, Neil. Like I think they're missing something without the intensity of somebody like a Jacob Fatu. And I'm just not really getting it from these guys yet. Thus far.
I get that. And also, we didn't see the Wyatts tonight, but if that's the direction, which has been hinted in recent weeks, it's not overly enthusing either for, you know, two factions against one another.
Yeah. So Nakamura and Phoenix lose. Nakamura, I came back, had that great match with Sami Zayn. They said, Alda said that he's owed another match because of the way that match ended, right? So I don't know if we're going back to him trying to, you know, campaign for the U.S. championship or if we're sticking with this Rey Fénix tag team. I think I'd be a little disappointed if, like, he just, you know, turns back into a babyface only to be in a tag team with Rey Fénix, which really at this point, everybody's in a tag team with Rey Fénix. So takes a bit of that specialty away. So we'll see. Jimmy Uso is with Nick Aldis, and Aldis tells him to stop attacking Drew McIntyre backstage. Jimmy says everybody knows that Drew attacked Jacob. Aldis says that I can do something about that tonight. I can put you and Drew into a match. Jimmy says he doesn't want a match. I want to fight. So Aldis says, Drew versus Jimmy, no DQ tonight. This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations. The holidays are fast approaching, but why not get your shopping done early and actually enjoy it? Uncommon Goods makes your holiday shopping easy and fun with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. I found this super cool Starry Night Air Fort. It's basically a blow-up fort covered in glow-in-the-dark stars. You just hook it up to a box fan, and in less than a minute, you have this awesome little space for the kids to play, or even for grown-ups to sneak in and have fun. It's lightweight, easy to pack away, and really great for relaxing or imaginative play at home. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting small businesses and artists, and with every purchase, they even give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. So shop early, have fun, and cross those names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/postwrestling. That's uncommongoods.com/postwrestling for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game. Delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIREST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
We see Julie in the back with the Secret Herbis and Nikki Cross always running around in the background. Chelsea suggests merging their brands together. Kiana James calls her a discount diva, says she actually has a match against the champ tonight. Julia says arrivederci, and Chelsea thinks that she said yes in Italian.
Yeah. I thought this was bad. I continue to hate this usage of Julia. And I'm a bit tired of the current incarnation of Chelsea Green, who is a great entertainer and could be really funny and entertaining. But whether it's the flyers for join, you know, become a slay agent, or this, you know, let's merge, you know, it's these fairly short skits backstage, and I'm not enjoying them particularly.
Yeah, they've been awful. Like, really, the sort of U.S. title division, the SmackDown tag division, they are some of the worst backstage skits that I think you'll see on WWE TV currently, including NXT. I don't know what it is. Like, it's just bad writing, period. I think the talent is certainly there, but the characters are just bad. And
we know that Chelsea can do a lot better than this, but if you're given shit material and you're just told stand on your mark and deliver the line, and you've got 90 seconds or less to, you know, for this segment, it's not going to be great.
Chelsea has such an incredible momentum. I mean, you watch that episode of Unreal where she was a focal point, and you just remember how, I mean, they took her to a US title level, which I think is, you know, a something, right? But she does not feel anywhere near that at present time, and neither does Julia, quite frankly. So we got Tiffany Stratton versus Kiana James. This is a non-title match, of course, and both of these women have gymnastics backgrounds, so you're getting a lot of flips to show off from the both of them to start. Julia distracts, leading to James taking control through a commercial break. Stratton delivers a handspring elbow into an Alabama slam. She goes for the PME, but James avoids and then delivers a Falcon Arrow for a two count. James takes her up top, and then Stratton knocks her down, delivers a Swanton, followed by the PME in getting the victory. Your thoughts on the match?
I thought it was, I mean, my eyes were really drawn to Kiana James here. I wanted to see how well she'd, you know, progressed since coming back into ring shape. And she impressed me in this pretty short, but, clean moves, nice athleticism. I thought her selling looked good. So I thought this was decent in that respect. In the other respect, I'm still completely, it goes back to the past segment, I'm very puzzled by this usage of Julia, just as a kind of a second, you know, here for, well, we'll get to the post-match, but, you know, for her to just be an accompanying person for Kiana James, what about this title that she holds? Who are the challengers? What's the division really look like? It's perplexing to me.
I mean, you understand the idea. You want a mouthpiece for Julia to be able to tell stories for Julia. But I mean, the idea of, I think, having a manager and a mouthpiece is that the person that she's talking for should still feel like the focal point. And Julia has just not felt like the focal point on the show at all. Yeah. Instead, we're getting Kiana James in these matches. I mean, obviously, as like, are we even getting a build to Julia versus Stratton, would you say? Like, does that
no, I wouldn't.
Like a direction?
No. I thought that might have been the direction by the end of this, but clearly, but, you know, as we'll get to, they're going somewhere else. So she
just feels like an afterthought, you know? And again, you look at, like, what they're doing with the Japanese talent on Raw, it's just night and day. The Japanese talent on Raw are stealing the show. Like, they're fully formed characters, and I still know nothing about Julia this long into her reign as U.S. champ.
And I think it's weird to have the mouthpiece manager role is well established in wrestling. You know, it can work really well, but Kiana James is sort of being presented as an equal to Julia without the title. They tag together. She competes on her own in singles matches. That just, to me, is a strange decision.
I'll say, though, I came away thinking Kiana James looked pretty good. And maybe that just comes from, like, expectations that aren't really so high to begin with after seeing her in, like, nothing. Like, they build her into a match and then had her squash, basically. But in this scenario, in a singles match against the champion, I thought she looked relatively good. Good athleticism, pretty nice-looking Falcon Arrow. I hate the gimmick, but, like, I can see why they're giving her the screen time and giving her the shot. So afterwards, we have a big angle here. Maybe the big news segment coming off of this show. Julia joins in on the attack on Tiffany Stratton, but she is saved by Jade Cargill, who comes in driving them away. Jade helps Stratton up, and you think there's a bit of tension, but instead Jade simply holds Stratton's hand up in celebration. And of course, with the shot lingering, and Jade's hair slicked back. We got ourselves a heel turn. Jade Cargill clotheslines Tiffany Stratton, continues the attack around the ring. Stratton retreats to the steps, and with her leg on the bottom step, Jade stomps on it. Stratton is left clutching her leg as Jade holds and stares at the championship. So let's go over to the backstage segment before I get your thoughts, Neil. So we see Jade Cargill backstage, and she tells the interviewer that she made the mistake of thinking that this world rewards patience. It doesn't. It rewards power. So she's taking it, starting with the WWE Women's Championship. What do you think of the turn, Neil, both the angle and also the character change?
I really liked this. I thought it was very well executed. I mean, in some ways, it's heel turn 101, but sometimes that works very effectively. I thought despite her studded collar and gloves, I did not see the turn coming.
No. She's wearing leather, Neil.
I know. I'm a fool. It's late at night for me. Wait. When she clotheslined her, I was genuine. Oh, wow. Okay. Here we go. Heel turn. But I think I really like this for Jade Cargill. I think it's a great move for her. I think that even when you consider the sort of move set a heel Jade will be employing proper, you know, I think that could be an easier in-ring path for her as well, for a development point of view, if you understand what I'm saying there as well. Mm-hmm. But this angle, I just thought was done very, very well. I mean, there's nothing particularly original about it, but it was executed well. The crowd really bought into it. They were booing away by the end of it. And the justification is just, you know, that she's fed up. She's lost patience. She was told to sort of, you know, be patient and all the good things will come to you or whatever, but she thinks that that's not the case now. So
yeah, it's a turn that's long overdue, in my opinion. Like, I think, to me, like, Jade Cargill has been an experiment of sorts in pushing her and seeing how far they could take her before I think the audience might not accept it. And I feel like we've seen, or at least I've been able to see that, like, you can push her up to a certain level, but she's not ready to be accepted as a babyface champion by this crowd. Again, babyface champion. Heel champion might be completely different, but as like a babyface champion that I think like the crowd demands a certain level of credibility for, she just doesn't possess that yet. But you know, once you maybe fail at a babyface run, or at least babyface championship match multiple times, where else do you go but try to turn somebody as a heel to get a different mileage out of it? So I'm interested to see what she maybe unlocks, you know, about her abilities. I'll say I felt like the in-ring intensity is still lacking, even in this sort of post-match attack where, like, this was her first, like, heel attack beatdown. But the aura is off the charts, and I thought the heel promo was pretty good. So I'm certainly willing to give it a chance.
I think the look is great, too, even though I didn't pick up on the signals at the beginning of this segment. She looks badass. And if anyone saw the Instagram photographs that she shared of her being busted open by the steps, there's clearly a red makeup line on the scar. But I wouldn't be surprised if there's a genuine permanent scar from this, because it looked very deep. That gash is pretty horrendous. And I know they'll have done the finest, nicest stitches possible, I'm sure. But the way that they've made it look with that red line, that's pretty cool too. So
it's great that we have evidence of where it came from, and for sure that, you know, I think it makes sense to play it up as maybe her big, like, turning point for deciding to turn into a heel. You ruined my face.
Yeah, that works better than I was Dr. Doom. To be impatient. Now I want power.
Well, yeah. Anyway, so big news coming off of the show, Jade Cargill officially turning heel, and we'll see where it goes.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, hello, hello. Davey Portman here from Poison Rana. We cover NXT every Tuesday night on the Post Wrestling feed in a show we call Up Next. But we do so much more. Follow Poison Rana Pod on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts for our live Sunday show, plus our Patreon with movie reviews, retro wrestling reviews, and more. Find out everything at poisonrana.ca.
Ilya Dragunov is backstage with Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn congratulates him. Dragunov respects him and says those open challenges are legendary. Zayn says they're no joke. Cena passed it on to him, and now he'll pass it on to Dragunov. Zayn says, you are the guy to do it. So,
he didn't say they were legendary. He said they were legendary.
Thank you.
Or something like that. Before he got all sex-faced with Sammy's, amping him up. To a crescendo.
What do you think happens with Sami Zayn right now?
That's interesting. Now they did at least on commentary mention that he couldn't compete. I think so. That sort of took away the obvious. You know, why isn't Sami just coming out to do a reversal and have his shot at an open challenge? So I think they at least explained that away this week. That you know he didn't come out straight away to get a rematch, but where they go with him is more of an open question. I think there's a space for him perhaps in the world title picture, but that's somewhere else. So it's interesting. I mean, I would hate to see him just sort of languish in the mid card without a proper program, and I don't see that for Sami Zayn. So I do wonder whether they might flip brands and perhaps put him into the world title picture on Raw. But that's just one of many paths they could take.
So Ilya Dragunov speaks. He says this year has been of recovery has had its highs and lows. He didn't always see the light at the end, but something that doesn't exist in his genetics is giving up. Because of that, he's the U.S. champion. He won this from a great man, so it's his duty to continue the legacy of the Open Challenge. And tonight, pain will entertain you. So his opponent coming in for the Open Challenge is Aleister Black, who now comes out with Zelina Vega in, you know, I certainly wonder if Karrion Kross and Scarlett were watching this because, I mean, yeah, it certainly gave you some of those Fallen Prey vibes. But how else would you do a Zelina Black and Black entrance? It's kind of what you'd expect. So maybe worth noting that Black challenged Zayn in the Open Challenge 3 weeks ago. So trying it again, okay?
Yeah.
And for him, maybe third time will be a charm later on, but Vega gets involved in the match. She delivers her apron Rana with the ref distracted, taking us to commercial break. Dragunov then comes back with several suplexes. More Zelina interference allows Black to gain control. Black delivers a springboard moonsault, but it's avoided, and Dragunov hits the Constantine special for a double down. Back from commercial break, Dragunov delivers a standing dropkick, but lands holding his neck. Dragunov delivers a senton for a two count. Torpedo Moscow is countered with a knee and brainbuster from Black for two, all targeting that neck. Torpedo Moscow connects again, but Dragunov can't cover because of his neck injury. Vega then trips Dragunov as he goes for the H-bomb, and at this point, the ref finally ejects Zelina Vega. But out comes Damian Priest, revealing a burnt eye from the fireball. This distraction allows Dragunov to hit Torpedo Moscow one more time for the victory. So your thoughts on the match?
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed the match. Now, when Aleister Black came out, I thought, okay, here we have two really, really good wrestlers. They've got in them a tremendous match. But I also thought, we're not getting a title change. a clean finish is probably off the table here. They could have gone for a non-finish or a DQ. So, you know, at least we didn't get that, but we did get the distraction. But the action up to that point, I thought was really good for a television match. I thought it was very intense, great, clean. If I have any complaints, they're kind of about the presentation. Maybe I'm alone, but watching the entrance, I just really couldn't take it seriously. Zelina sort of slinking around her husband's legs. I think genuinely trying to channel the snake that they had last week. And then doing the same thing in the ring before the match, where she sort of leant backwards on her knees and stuff. My reaction to that was to laugh. I just thought it was very amusing to me. As I get used to this new Zelina, I'm sure it'll, you know, she's doing her absolute level best with this. Like, you can see it, because I think she always does really give it her all. So I just wanted to say that about the sort of presentation of the two of them together. I found it kind of funny.
She's now a live snake, a human snake. Okay.
That was my kind of vibe. I think that's the vibes that she's trying to channel. But yes, the match I thought was really, really good. Probably the best thing on the show in ring up until the finish, which, you know, was what it was.
Well, it certainly tells you that these open challenges are in good hands. This was another banger from them. And with Dragunov coming in, basically replacing Sami Zayn, kind of offers like a fresh look. I mean, I'm just as excited to see a new Ilya Dragunov match as I was, you know, one of those Sami Zayn matches. And as a showcase for Dragunov, this has probably been the best thing he's had so far in WWE. And it's the type of gimmick that allows the wrestling to get somebody over. Yeah. And of course, you know, he's going to be amazing at that. Great work from Aleister Black here as well. I love having Zelina attached to Black. I think it makes total sense. I think they complement each other really well. But I thought the attempts to interfere to me were kind of generic within the match. I was hoping to see something a bit more novel and different to Zelina in this iteration that we hadn't seen before. It otherwise just kind of felt like a pretty standard, you know, female manager interference type of role.
The interference was very standard. Yeah. Just grabbing the leg, you know, all of that kind of thing. Distractions.
Yeah.
And so on.
So, but she was a difference maker here because afterwards Priest beats on Aleister Black, but Vega climbs on his back, poking at him in his burnt eye. So that feud will continue. Who do you think had the better eye makeup? Jade Cargill here or what is this? Damien Priest with his
Jade. It was more badass because, I mean, the fireball gimmick is just so goofy that, you know, the makeup was done quite well. I mean, it does look
would
like
a burn look like this in what, like a week, 2 weeks?
No. I think the eye itself would probably be a bit more damaged.
Do you remember when they unmasked Kane?
I do, yes.
And like he had like black on his face as if to suggest like there's been ash underneath.
There's charring still there.
There's black char underneath this mask for like 20 to 30 years or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this wasn't that.
It was not that. I think a bit of his eyebrow would be missing from the burn. I think the eye itself would probably be bloodshot still. This just looks like a bit of a ketchup incident or something, you know, with one of those little packets that sometimes squirts. But,
Which could be bad too.
Could be, yeah.
Yeah, true. Ketchup to the eye. Well, Carmelo is in the back. He is grateful for The Miz and everything he's taught him, but he crossed the line when he put his hands on him. So he says last week he got even with The Miz, and the old me would have kept things going this week, but now I'm going to let it slide, and he says that we are even. So now I can finally fulfill my destiny to be him. This is when maybe my front runner for worst gimmick of the year appears. Kit Wilson joins us, and he shows up to say that the language that Carmelo has been using is hyper-masculine, and it's a crime on intelligence. So, of course, Carmelo challenges him to a match for next week, which means Kit Wilson will finally be in the ring next week and more of him. So,
yeah. Said this before. I just find this unbelievably weak comedy that people in the back, there are some people in the back will find hilarious. It's very Vince to me. Mm-hmm. I can imagine that Vince, if he was watching, thought this was hilarious, because this is the sort of thing he would latch on to. Oh, these sort of woke people, you know, let's make fun of them or whatever.
Please go ahead and do that, but have it be clever. Have it be like of some sort of like, I don't know, like have some thought put into it. This really has nothing.
I genuinely think if you plugged this sort of a few lines of this is the character into ChatGPT, and I know there's been all the talk about AI storyline writing, you would get something better than him just saying, you are too hyper masculine and you're poisoning young men's minds every week. It's really shit.
ChatGPT, please take over the storyline, because I think this has bad human writing all over it. I think AI would actually improve this greatly.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Let's go up next to, well, Fraxium is in the back with Ilya Dragunov, and Axiom says that they both want a challenge for the championship. Dragunov says, sure. See you around. I have one of these every week, so see you later. They are stopped by Fraxium are stopped by DIY, who just kind of taunt them again. Axiom says DIY are scared, and DIY says they aren't. And at this point, Tamatonga comes in and does this sort of cutthroat motion at Fraxium. He does the Robert De Niro meet the parents, you know, I'm watching you. Then he does cutthroat. He doesn't say any words. He only does his hyena laugh, which I got a real kick out of. I'm glad that's back.
Well, it makes one of us.
No.
I hate these segments. They're again a bit like we were talking about earlier on. People are standing on their marks and delivering their lines. And there's another one to come that's even worse after this. I just don't like goofy DIY delivering their lines. I don't know. It's good to see Ilya. We already talked about all of this. So I think he and any of these guys will make for a good open challenge. So I hope we see them in the ring. But as for these promo segments or these backstage interactions, they're dreadful.
Yeah, I don't disagree overall. But I do find it novel that Tamatonga is like, you know, he's strictly doing his backstage segments clearly without any sort of talking, which I find kind of amusing.
Okay.
No?
Yeah.
No, okay.
That's fair enough. And no without agreement. The face paint as well, when he turns up for these. Yeah, he's had a shower and everything.
So no agreement. You don't have to try to, you know, force agreement there, Neil. It's okay. Charlotte is in the back with Alexa, and Bailey called them out on social media apparently to come to Raw. So Charlotte says she saw it, and they ask if her and Lyra are even friends. So expect Bailey and Lyra versus Charlexa coming up. This is when Nia Jax comes in and says, she says that she's just waiting for these two to stab each other in the back. Charlotte says that's projection. And Nia says that she was in a friendship with somebody once. And if she's manipulative, then she learned it from the best as she looks towards Alexa. Alexa says people change, but if you're looking for the old me, she's not hard to find. So Nia challenges Alexa for a match next week, and Alexa says you're on. So, I mean, this seems to promise Charlotte and Alexa finally making it over to Raw, which I think has a much healthier women's division, period. Yeah. So to me, they've been incredibly cold on SmackDown. We'll see if like things can shake up for them a little bit on Raw. Of course, the Kabuki Warriors have stated that they wanted the tag team titles. So I'm looking forward to that if that's the case.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that the women's mid card on Raw is orders of magnitude better than it is on SmackDown. So if they can make their way over there, you know, I assume we're going to get that match on Monday. I hope so. As for the talking, terrible. You know, again, and I don't mean to harp on about it, but, you know, Nia coming in, and you can almost see her looking down to see where there's my mark to stand on. And again, just delivering the lines. I'm not in a bad mood, folks, I promise, but there's this, and I get that live TV demands strict timing. This is a run up to a hard break, this segment as well, but it's so incredibly scripted and badly delivered. It really just put me in mind of of a bad table read, you know, where actors have been are seeing the script for the very first time.
Okay.
And there's forced interaction.
But okay. Is the blocking and the scripting really the issue? Because that same thing happens on Raw. And I have to assume that you like a lot of the Raw stories better, right? Like
That's true.
The Kabuki Warriors are doing is
you make a
is
good
exactly
point.
This.
You make a good point. The Kabuki Warriors are much more believable in the roles that they're playing. So I wouldn't say this about them, but perhaps some of the Lyra Valkyria and Bailey stuff. The acting is not great. So you make a good point there, but I feel like the program that surrounds it all, that wraps it all up, is better. With this, I don't really care so much. I feel like, although I still kind of like Alexa and Charlotte paired together, they don't really seem to have natural chemistry. I think it's better for Charlotte than it is for Alexa. I think Alexa could spread her wings quite easily as a solo performer. She's shown that. Charlotte, I think, has a little bit of a harder time with promos and being on her own, at least since her comeback. So I don't know. I would still keep these two together, Charlotte and Alexa I'm speaking about. I don't know. The chemistry, the dynamic, the forced odd couple stuff, it really hasn't crossed the line for me. It hasn't really got to where it needs to. And they have had a pretty long run at it.
Yeah. I think they actually do have chemistry, but I don't think it's been well developed. And I think, again, the writing has been really poor for them. Like, I think there are so many ways that I think you can really showcase, like, these two, you know, like actually being at odds over certain things and then really having to come together against a greater threat. And we've just got none of that. We've got nothing that has really sort of like amplified this relationship from what it was in week one to now. The audience certainly wanted it, but like they've either kept them off TV period, or they've just done nothing to really develop the relationship other than to, like, I don't know, sell like catchphrases on t-shirts and just like constantly mention, you know, like just you know, like I don't really like you, but I do, like that sort of thing.
I don't mean to interrupt your flow at all, but I just think we know the resources that this company has. Well, where are the vignettes? Why, you know, why not film something with the two of them and just stick that on screen? You know, I think that would be a far better use of their time than having them on this live show for 90 seconds backstage.
Yeah, I feel like NXT has like told this sort of like odd couple story, I don't know, at least like 15 times in their history. And often it involves like going out, you know, whether it be to like, I don't know, Fallon Henley's farm or something like that. Like they'll at least like invest the resources into doing something like that. I have no idea why they've not just done something like that with Charlotte and Alexa.
On the Post Wrestling Cafe this month, John Pollock and Wei Ting sit down for a new edition of Talk. We are also going back to 1992 to look at the G1 Climax from that year. Rich Van and W.H. Park are getting together to review Peacemaker Season 2 and look at Marvel Zombies. Plus, we have Book Club detailing Kamala Harris's new release, 107 Days, weekly editions of Collision Course, and the XL versions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. All can be found at postwrestlingcafe.com.
Anyway, officially Stratton versus Cargill for the WWE Women's Championship has been added to Saturday night's main event. That joins Drew versus Cody for the WWE Men's Championship and also Jey Uso versus CM Punk for the Bacon World Men's Championship as well. No DQ is our main event here between Jimmy Uso and Drew McIntyre, and they start things off by brawling into the crowd. Jim brings a Slim Jim table in to take us to a commercial break. Drew hits Jimmy with a chair. Jim sits Jim down on it and then says, "You chose this." But Jimmy drop toe holds Drew into the chair instead. They haven't sponsored the chairs yet, Neil. Do you think it's about time they find a sponsor for these chairs?
I'm kind of surprised they haven't gotten there yet. Mean yet. It will happen.
Yes, okay. Maybe like Office Depot or something?
Sure, Staples. Yeah, or Staples.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Jimmy whacks him repeatedly with the Office Depot chair, sets up the table, but Drew ends up future shocking him onto the chair. Drew goes for the Claymore, but Jim Samoan drops Drew through a table. Jimmy goes for the Uso splash, but Drew intercepts it by throwing a chair at his head. Again, all these missed activations, Neil. Claymore gets the win. What did you think about the match?
I wasn't thrilled about this being the main event, you know, earlier in the show. I'm not the greatest fan of Jimmy Uso in a singles capacity. And I thought it's going to be a bit of an uphill task to make him a believable opponent in a competitive match with Drew. That said, I think they did a decent enough job here, which I knew was going to lead to Cody coming out to set up next week. So, you know, and that's what happens next. But it was fine. I wasn't overly excited by much of this. I will say at this, it seems a reasonable point in the show to mention that I did welcome Corey being back on commentary this week. I think that he does a much better job of any of the people who've been standing in, Booker in particular, at sort of telling the story of what's going on. For example, even earlier, and I know this is slightly off point, he tried to kind of give some motivation to what Cody did last week by saying that, you know, well, you know, you've seen what the loss at Crown Jewel had done to Cody, you know. So he's a better guy for trying to narrate what's going on in the characters' minds, I think. So that was a welcome back, I think. And during this match as well, he was doing a good job with Cole. But yeah, the match itself, you know, it wasn't really, even by WWE standards, what I would expect from a no DQ match. And not a kendo stick to be seen. I mean, I'm not actually complaining about that, but I think it's very strange. Someone forgot to load them into the van, I think.
Yeah. No aquariums either in the van. So I thought it was a decent little TV match. Maybe my expectations are just much lower for these sort of things when it comes to, like, you know, it being in the WWE and also it being a TV match. For me, it was notable that, like, Jimmy Uso has become a much hotter act since his stint on Raw doing everything with Jay. Because it wasn't that long ago that he was doing these sort of similar matches on SmackDown to, I think, very little interest, at least personally for me, and also with the crowd as well. He comes back after, like, spending a month or two on Raw where he feels very refreshed and actually feels like a relevant character. It was kind of odd seeing him in this role. Like, I don't know if this was always the plan for it and what they're actually building towards here, but it felt like a one-night thing for Jimmy Uso. SmackDown, guest starring Jimmy Uso, and he somehow plays some sort of surrogate for Cody Rhodes here. I mean, I imagine all of it is going to lead back to Jay maybe making a comment about how, like, hey, like, you're losing focus or something like that. What, you know, you didn't have to do all that. Are you expecting Jimmy Uso to have any sort of, like, longer presence on SmackDown, or is this a one-night thing?
I think it was probably a one-night thing. He came to kind of avenge his cousin. I think that's what we're taking from all of this. And, you know, didn't quite get there.
No. Okay, so afterwards, Drew chokes Jimmy with the chair. And this is when Cody comes in to Jim's rescue. Drew, however, claymores Cody from behind and leaves him laying as we close the show. So that's our build towards all. We are one more show away from Saturday night's main event, next Saturday.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to be like Jekyll and Hyde a little bit, I think, because I feel like I've complained about a lot of tonight's show. But I'll say this was a solid episode of SmackDown, and I've definitely seen a lot worse. If you go back maybe a month, I think we had a run of really bad Friday night shows. So it was better than of late. We saw, I think, a real improvement in SmackDown last week, and I think that continues. The Jade turn was very good. I think the continuation of Who Attacked Jacob is interesting, because I feel like we're being led down the path that it wasn't Drew McIntyre. We've got the continued build with Cody and Drew for Saturday night's main event. I'm halfway interested in a solo Melo once he gets past Kip Wilson. Of course, I'm not particularly interested in that match next week, which I fully expect to be
The first feud is going to be The Miz. They still have to see that through.
Yeah, I was. That's another thing about that Kit Wilson segment. You know, I really expected the Miz to run in and attack, not for Kit Wilson to sort of turn up and do his shtick, but that's what we're getting, I guess.
That'll be next week. Yeah, yeah. As far like what I recommend, certainly the Jade Cargill turn. That's relatively big news. I thought it was okay, this edition of SmackDown. I didn't think any of these matches, other than the Dragunov versus Black match, yes, which was certainly excellent. I didn't think anything else was really that worth recommending. And they're really building the MFTs as these sort of like, I don't know, people that are taking over the mid card, but they just don't feel threatening to me at all. This still very much feels to me like it's the lacking show, especially on an episode where like Cody didn't have that big of a role. But Drew McIntyre, you know, in this feud with Cody, I think is starting to heat up a little bit more, giving him like an actual grudge to get into like the best version of his character in. So we'll see what they can do with one more episode of SmackDown to go. So, all right. So that about does it. Do we have a final score of this game?
I don't know if it's final. Bottom of the 8th, 11-4 is all the information that's on my screen.
Okay, bottom of the 8th. All right, LA, you still have a chance, all right? Do you have a final prediction of this score?
I'm not well-versed enough in baseball, but I have a final prediction for the result that the Toronto are going to win. So
I think that's not good enough, Neil. I need numbers, okay? I'm going to predict 32-6 Toronto. All right.
Right. I'll be a bit more conservative because I'm not even sure if that's possible, even though my grasp of the rules of baseball are somewhat lacking. I'm more of a cricket guy over here in Europe, but I'll say like 16-4, something like that.
16-4. Okay. That sounds just as crazy. But my unread messages and my texts are going nuts right now with this very high scoring game. They had a 9-run inning. Holy shit. What the fuck? That's a lot, Neil. But yeah. 9 runs in one inning? What the Okay. Anyway, we're going off into the Pro Wrestling Cafe where, I mean, we might have some feedback. We might have none because maybe none of you guys decided to watch SmackDown. And, well, we do have some feedback. So we're going to go to that instead. Join us, everybody, for Collision Course tomorrow with Nate and Kate from Montreal. And then up next, are talking about Halloween Havoc in the Post Wrestling free feed on YouTube. So join us then. Let's go over to forum.postwrestling.com.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.